previously on Popping Collars.
And then rallies, you just get to say a loud thing to a whole bunch of people. You don't actually have to sit down and, you know, practice humility or practice, you know, linear thinking. And, you know, he does it really well. And I'm ready anytime to go to the sexy president thing, by the way. I've like thought of five as we were sitting here.
I think that's a segue, and I love it. So,
is that a segue?
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives in the space between meaning and culture. My name is Greg Knight. I am the director of children and youth ministries at the Church of Bethesda by the Sea in Palm Beach, Florida. With me is Betsy Gonzalez. Betsy, where are you? What are you up to?
I'm in Alexandria, Virginia, where I'm the head chaplain at the Episcopal High School.
And Liz Easton. Liz, where are you? How cold is it where you are?
Hey, Greg. I'm in Omaha, Nebraska, where it's not that cold. We've been having a really kind of back and forth winter. And I'm the canon to the ordinary in the Diocese of Nebraska.
And we have a special guest this time, you guys. The chief film critic for the Washington Post. It's Anne Hornaday, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Anne. What is something that we need to know about you? What is something that identifies you apart from your job?
Oh, that's a really good question. What? I'm an avid reader.
All right.
Reader, actually, and I attend the Cathedral of the Incarnation. I should have said that first. Oh, I buried the lead. But I'm an active parishioner at the Cathedral of the Incarnation in Baltimore, Maryland.
This is our 54th episode of the show, and the topic today is film criticism. So whether it's stars or thumbs or tomatoes, there seems to be this inherent need in us as consumers of culture to express our opinions of what we've seen or read or listened to. We're so grateful to Anne for coming on the show because she has a book coming out that's about this very topic. It's called Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. So Anne, you don't have to spoil the book for us, but what are we doing wrong when we're watching movies these days?
Oh, I don't think people are doing very much wrong at all. And this book is really, it's for people who love to go to movies and just want to heighten their experience a little bit. It's for people who just might be curious about how a professional critic approaches her job. And if I were to take a poll of my colleagues, I would imagine that, you know, every critic would probably answer that question differently in terms of what are you looking for and how do you approach it. And so this is actually a really personal book, mostly because I didn't come to this job as a film fan. I mean, I wasn't a film major. I wasn't a film geek. I really came to it as a writer. And I sort of very gradually began writing about film, first as a reporter and then eventually as a critic. So my film education really occurred on the job, and it occurred by watching a lot of movies and by interviewing filmmakers and actors and sort of, you know, directors and craftspeople. I sort of, you know, use my own education as a journey through what I've learned about the various aspects of filmmaking that have helped me be a better critic.
Little peek behind the curtain. Since we started the show, we've been hooked up with a PR firm that kind of gets us into screenings every now and then and stuff like that.
Oh, good.
It's hilarious to me because, you know, I go to these theaters and they ask me, like, are you on the list? And I'm like, yeah, I'm on the list. I think I'm with media. And they're like, yeah, you can sit in the press section. And I just feel like a big fraud. I mean, just like a complete phony. I can't imagine what it is that you go through having to sit with people like me.
The more the merrier, and own it, man. Just like right on in. We love having people sit with us.
Well,
you know,
I'm just thinking, and maybe like Betsy and Liz have a different take than I do. I mean, honestly, when I go to movies, I don't know if I'm focused on anything except the story. I mean, that's kind of like my entry point into the whole thing. That's what I'm focused on. The crafting of the shot, like all that stuff. I don't necessarily have the language to even notice it most of the time, it seems like.
Well, Greg, going to these movie screens is not my first rodeo in press screening.
Oh, so, that's right. You're press. I forget.
So back in the day,
we have a ringer, ladies and gentlemen.
We do.
We have a ringer.
So it's either, you know, I would sometimes go with Michael O'Sullivan or Justin Howe to go to the movies. You know, we got an extra screener. You want to come? Or it was me being like the, you know, before kids like EW screenings in DC, and I would, you know, getting the screening thing so that I could go. And I don't know, watching movies critically when you're not the critic is really fascinating. It must be like going out with like Tom Sietzma and having dinner, you know, going out with a food critic, because you're just experiencing, it's not that it detaches you from the experience in any way. You're just, you're watching it with a slightly more critical eye.
Well, I should say that I don't get to go to the screeners because Omaha is not a big enough market for
for any of you. You have Warren Buffett, for God's sake.
I know.
You would think.
You have the College World Series. I don't know. So I haven't had a chance yet to have
and
that.
Alexander Payne, doesn't Alexander Payne still live there?
Yeah, some of the time.
Wow, you should get him on the case. Yeah. He needs to see stuff.
But I took a couple of film studies classes in college as part of my English major, which some of those, the kind of critical pieces of that have stuck with me. But I go to movies mainly for escapism, to be honest with you. I'll go to a movie when I have an evening where, like, I don't, you know, I don't have a family here. So it's like, I don't really want to just sit around my apartment and there's a movie theater I could walk to just blocks from my house. And, but I don't have a super, I don't approach a film the way that I approach a written text. And I think the only reason is mainly because I don't want to think that hard when I go to the movies, which is terrible. There's a rare occasion where I'll seek out a movie because that is what I want. But more often than not, it's all about the popcorn and the glass of wine and the,
it's an interesting medium because, unlike a book, it's very immersive, and I think it gets to you on a different kind of liminal way that you do want to surrender to, and you don't want to be overly analytical. So I really respect that, and actually in the book I even say your first job as a critic is to surrender. And so really, what this book, what I try to do is construct the chapters in a way, I kind of follow the craft areas of a typical film, and I roughly follow the production of a film. So I start with the screenplay. How do you know if something's been well written? Then I go to acting. How do you evaluate a performance? And then cinematography and production design and editing and all the way through. And what I try to do is provide readers with just some information and some guiding questions to think about after they've seen something. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, let yourself go, let it wash over you, have the experience, you know, don't overpick everything to death, because that would not be fair to the film or to you. Mm-hmm. But then maybe later, over that glass of wine with your, you know, or an espresso, if something's really stuck with you, you might be able to kind of look back and think, God, the way they constructed those shots was really interesting, or the music and the sound design. And by the same token, you know when a movie isn't working, so it's also a way to kind of figure out what's not working.
God bless Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, right? Because they brought a lot of they brought criticism to pop culture. And,
absolutely.
And like the whole thumbs up, thumbs down thing was, I mean, that was what you put on your movie ad. That was what you put on your movie billboard, right? This idea of like thumbs up, thumbs down. The problem that particular sort of at the movie style, the problem with it though is that it's so binary. Like there's nothing that exists between those things. It's either good or it's bad.
That's right.
And I got to tell you, when I'm working with kids, Betsy and I were talking about this earlier today. Like when I'm working with kids, like they live in this world of like, well, is this person a good person? Is this person a bad person? Like, I don't know. They're probably a bit of both, right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, that's kind of how a lot of people are in life. And
exactly.
Like being able to think critically and engage culture critically, I think is so helpful because it gets you out of those kind of binary ways of thinking of like this person's good, this person's bad, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, what I like about the approach it seems your book is taking, Anne, is that it's not fighting against this tide that everybody has now become the critic. We're not going to fight that.
Oh, sure.
That is what is happening, right?
Exactly.
It's saying, here's a toolbox to really help you do this work in a way that's been really helpful to me.
That's exactly what we hope it is. Your mouth to God's ears. I really, that was the aim. I mean, I'm in that insecure space of thinking like, oh, I didn't do this and I forgot to do that. And I'm just, you know, in a little bit of a panic. But yes, this is my hope. This is my hope, is that that's exactly what it will be for people.
Well, and I think too, the Siskel and Ebert model, the fieriness of their relationship, because at the same time, we're talking about movies and they could both craft wonderful written pieces. We're also selling a television show with, yes, with a kind of combustible combination of people. And it took criticism in some respects into this kind of place of conflict.
Absolutely.
Being as a criticizing in that way. And
yes,
and I think, you know, Greg and I were talking about this because we were talking about it through the lens of our, you know, his youth group student, his youth group folks, my students, that when I ask them to critically read text, particularly biblical text, whether they have more or less familiarity with it or not, that is, feels very threatening because it feels like I'm asking them to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm asking them to really poke holes in this and let's find some doubt in here, children. Let's just dig in on it, right? But right, that I'm asking you to really read it with a lens that can, that is the pull back and, you know, ask yourself questions of, you know, is, what's going on here? And why is, what's motivating this person to do this? And why are we in this setting? And do I really like any of these people? Like, be able to ask yourself those questions. And that's what critical reading can look like in a scriptural sense. But because they have this personal relationship to it, so hard sometimes to really get them to dig in a little bit differently academically, perhaps.
That is so interesting. That is fascinating. I mean, it's, you're right. I mean, it's like, it's that washing over thing. It's that surrender first that you have to do, you know, and you're kind of allowing them to do that. And it's, you know, one thing I've learned, you know, now that I've been doing this for 20 something years, I think that at the beginning, you know, I am a very aesthetically inclined person. I love art. I love painting and images. And I, you know, it's just, it's the technical and aesthetic elements are of great interest to me. But I think now I have a much deeper appreciation for film as an emotional medium, you know, and an emotional experience for people. And so to your point, Betsy, it's like, what are you, what's happening for you? You know, it's like, what are you, what's pinging for you here? What are you vibrating to? I mean, it's kind of woo-woo, you know, it's a little bit of a mystical thing, but it's kind of taking away all that, that picayune stuff and just really kind of getting to the core meaning of the work and the, and what it means to people. And cause it's deeply meaningful to people.
That comment reminds me of a article that Roger Ebert wrote. It was one of his last reviews actually. And you know, the problem with the aggregating things like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic and stuff like that is that it all comes down to, well, did you like it or did you not like it?
Exactly.
And he wrote this review of a movie that I know that you're a fan of, The Gray, Liam Neeson and stuff like that. And it was one of his last reviews, and you could tell that he's wrestling with the same things that, that are the themes of that movie, which
exactly,
is, you know, it's not about like Liam Neeson fighting wolves. It's about death coming. It wasn't a review that reflected whether or not he liked the movie. He ends the review with this line, though, where he says, I thought about this movie a lot after I left the movie theater,
mm-hmm,
you know? And it's like, mm-hmm, that's enough. Like, mm-hmm, it doesn't matter if you mm-hmm like it or not. It
and it doesn't matter that the cinematography was this or that the, yeah, exactly. It's just, and you know, the feedback I get the most from readers is on that level. You know, the role of the critic has changed from that Empyrean Olympian voice from on high, the Paul, you know, because the other person was Pauline Kael. It was the sort of Siskel Ebert, mm-hmm, and Pauline Kael were kind of the ones who, you know, made critics visible. And in there, and she was that Olympian Empyrean to me figure pronouncing, you know, this is the way, you know, this is how, you know, thus I spake. And now it's really a more pastoral, I think, a pastoral role, like where we're your companions. It's like we're all in this together and it's so much more interactive, and I should interact more and I don't, but still, you know, when we're all, when we're engaging with one another and everybody's tweeting and commenting and stuff, it's that sort of, you're a companion critic, and it's not on that same level of the of people just wanting to be affirmed. You know, it's deeply appreciating, like, wow, we both had this very, the same very powerful experience. And thank you for maybe putting it into words in a new way or something like that.
Well, it's also, I mean, that's actually the way you describe that sounds like some of the transformation of how priesthood is looked at, as opposed to being the voice from on high and I am the one who knows everything. Now it's, you know, I'm a companion on the journey with you.
There you
go. I'm walking with you. I'm walking here with you. I use that language all the time here, especially in a multi-faith environment. And it doesn't decrease your authority and your expertise. Uh-huh. In the same way, it doesn't decrease my authority or my expertise. Uh-huh. It's just a way of acknowledging that we're all still learning. I mean, you know, I know Liz and I have had conversations, you know, that half of seminary is kind of beating the right answers out of you a little bit, you know, that I don't know everything.
Right.
And that's
right,
okay. Right. Admitting that and being able to be vulnerable with whether it's parishioners or whoever it's going to be when you leave.
One of the things that I'm wondering about kind of more broadly has to do with that issue of authority, I guess, and maybe not authority, but expertise and sort of the career skill set and knowledge that you learn over the course of time. And one thing that I'm really struggling with in this post-inauguration season, which I may be struggling with too much to even really talk about articulately, is the way that social media is being used as a, especially Facebook, I'm thinking, as sort of a front page for cultural criticism from everyone. That all of a sudden, every single one of us, and I think I see clergy doing this more than anybody else, but every single one of us has this opportunity to reflect on whatever is happening in this moment. And it's like we're trying to out articulate each other. And, you know, there's going to be hundreds of, and you're ticking people off left and right, and other people weigh in and, you know, don't tell me what to believe. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what to believe. It's just incredibly frustrating for me. And honestly, I resent that now being public on Facebook in some way politically is equated with action, which we know from the, you know, activist communities and organizing that it's only the very, very tip of the iceberg when it comes to real, you know, action and real cultural criticism. Anyway, I'm just curious about that. And because when you were describing your book, I was thinking, gosh, I would love a book that was like that, that provided a framework for how to engage political news, how to engage, I don't know, all kinds of things, because I feel like we're all kind of lost. We have this expectation that we need to be, or not even that we need to be, but that we can be experts on literally any topic.
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to an old friend yesterday, and Maggie Roach, the singer, died over the weekend, and she had known her and they were friendly, and she was really, and she interacts mostly on Facebook. And so she had just put up a little memorial, you know, to Maggie, and immediately, like, everybody had to kind of, it's the culture of weighing in now. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to weigh in, and it's like, you have to put in your two cents, and it's like, and usually it's about you. You know, it's like, my favorite song was this, or, you know, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like, could we maybe sit for a minute? And, you know, like in my church, we spend, you know, over the last few years, we've spent a lot of time on listening, and we've done a lot of trainings in compassionate listening. And, you know, I think that's connected. It's kind of like, can we sit with our feelings for a while and mm-hmm. not weigh in? Like, maybe just resist that temptation to just like, boom, here's my take, you know, mm-hmm. and.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's get real. Episcopal priests who just have MDivs, we're not experts in anything either.
Nope.
Really, we're not. We're professionals. We have, but you know, we're not.
That's true.
That's why we're doing this podcast.
Uh-oh. That's right. Uh-oh. Watch out, bro.
Excuse me. So let's put that aside. But anyway, I have some level of expertise in some things, and no expertise in most things. So I've been wondering about this issue of weighing in and sort of what it's doing to all of us. And I had this fantasy today that I would spend the whole year reading. Only posting long reads and just telling people, I mean, like real critical journalism about cultural issues. Because what I keep saying to people when I'm asked about, you know, what happened, what do you think, why was this the result of the election? All that I know is that it's complicated and I don't understand it. It is not because I'm stupid that I don't understand it and that I don't want to weigh in. It's because it's so complicated and I really don't understand it. And what would happen if everybody committed to sort of actually an increased intellectualism and increased reliance on expertise when it came to really sorting out what's happening in other parts of our country that have caused this kind of discord?
And listen, I mean, that loops back to the listening piece, I think, you know, it's like, what if we all just, yeah, I think you make a very good point. I mean, and I even feel, you know, and weighing in is my job, like literally, and, right. And Betsy knows, like the pressure's on even more, like tomorrow is Oscar nomination day. Ooh. And, you know, so by the time this,
what time are you getting up tomorrow?
I know, it's very late. It's like 8:50 or something, okay. So. 5:15 in LA though, so if we
that's
were in
right,
LA,
very early. That's how I was woken yeah. up in the middle of the night.
I know. but you know, it's like I'm already kind of like, what's my take going to be? And you know, and even I feel sometimes like I wish I had the luck. You know, sometimes I don't know if I do have a take, and sometimes I feel like I do need a little time. But as Betsy knows, you know that those days are G-O-N-E gone. It's like. Expertise now is having kind of the history and the means by which to at least be thoughtful, if not brilliant, you know, but at least not be kind of gratuitous and glib. That would be the worst thing.
Well, it's that ability to be thoughtful versus reactionary, you know.
Right.
How soon am I going to post my reaction to what's going on? You know, am I live tweeting the nomination? Yeah. Like, what am I doing? Like, I found
that is there pushback if you don't, this is what concerns me. Is there pushback in your communities, whatever that looks like, your church community, your community of friends, is there pushback when you don't speak?
That's a really good question.
And I feel like there is for some people.
Mm-hmm. There would be for me.
Awfully silent. Oh, yeah. And might have some job security issues. Yeah, I'm not going to do the Oscar nomination.
I got nothing.
But I think, you know, there was one of the sketches on Saturday Night Live this past weekend was the La La Land sketch. Did anybody else see? Okay, so Aziz Ansari is in an interrogation room. So two of the cast members come in. Total kind of hyped up New York kind of cops, you know, like there it's Law and Order. They're interrogating him. And he, I guess, posted something or said something to someone. Oh, yeah, it was on a date that La La Land was like, okay, it was a little slow in the middle. And so they had hauled him in and arrested him. And he's cuffed up interrogating him about La La Land. And he was essentially watching like a comment board come to life.
Exactly.
You're trying to kind of express what you want. And they're like, he's like, and the singing is okay. It's like, that's the point. They're just regular people singing about their dreams and you don't understand. And it's like, whoa,
you know,
oh no.
That's
perfect. And it was really well done. But you're talking about kind of that what that pushback looks like. I mean, that's just the pushback actually in the room, much less pushback when, you know, you don't have to see them and they don't have to know your real name. And
that reminds me of, I remember that the week of the election, everybody was so shell-shocked. And I remember thinking, it was the week that Arrival opened, the science fiction movie with Amy Adams. And I thought, nobody's going to feel like going out. Like everybody's going to be so exhausted and just sort of like, ugh. Well, instead, it did really well, actually. And what was so interesting is that that movie, the whole sort of, it's not even the subtext, the whole theme of the movie is communication and welcoming the stranger. And, you know, it just like there was something so kind of comforting about the fact that people went to that movie, like that was the narrative that they wanted to see and that it's done so well. It's like it's very gratifying in some way. It's just so wonderful.
And so my school, the tradition here at the school is to go to the inauguration. And then there was a group of students whose parents were concerned about safety, which there always are. And then a group of parents who I think were not as psyched about having their kid go. And the kid wasn't into it. And so, but the night before,
because it was like, well, they're not going to study because they don't have any real homework for tomorrow. So every grade watched a movie. And the grade that really stood out for me was the sophomore class. They watched The Butler. Oh. And so they came back from that. And some of the girls were just like, oh, like, you know, all, you know, upset. And, you know, we've made so much progress. And now I'm all worried. And, you know, and it was this, it ended, but it ended up being this cathartic, another way to kind of talk about with them where they were and what they were feeling. And using the movie and the content of the movie as a conduit to talk about some of the anxiety that they were holding on to about
the direction wonderful.
Things seem to be going.
I mean, it goes back to what you were saying, Nan. Like movies are, at the end of the day, they're about watching human interaction, and there's something right. really cathartic about that for people.
There is. And I think that it's, and I think what makes, and another way I've evolved is in terms of just my appreciation of the art form, is that I think I have more respect for that. I think I have more respect for the power of it. I think I have a better grasp of how the medium of film, unlike any other artistic medium, because of its realism, because of its scale, because you're in a dark room, I just think it gets to our consciousness and infiltrates our consciousness so potently and powerfully. Those images, they do kind of become symbolic reality.
You are our staff for the day. So what's your staff pick this time?
Oh, yes. So, you know, we talked a few moments ago about whether new political changes causes you to run away into other stories and narratives. And I think I've been running away into one that is, I don't know, by comparison, everything now seems a lot better than what's going on there. And that is The Man in the High Castle. And
oh, so yeah.
Finally catching up on this one. That's and it's really dark. I mean, it is like, it's not just people who are like Nazis, it's literal Nazis. And, you know, I've really been enjoying it. I'll give it a little bit of the La La Land criticism that Aziz Ansari said. It can be a little slow, but what I think they're doing is they're so woven in and been so thoughtful about imagining this scenario of Germany occupying everything on one side of the Rockies and Japan having everything on the other, neutral zone in the middle, how does that culture interweave with American culture, their use of, you know, songs, it's all set in 1962, all knit underneath. And it's the same songs as now that you know, that existed in our reality, but they're just used in different ways, particularly in different scenes. The level of detail, you know, how can we fit more double lightning bolt things in the outfit, the linger on the on the leather trenches of the, you know, all of that visual, for me as a visual person, I just keep kind of eating it up. And as they move the characters through the world, it really is a way to kind of say, oh, you want to know what going to the doctor looks like and being diagnosed with something that has no cure in the Nazi world? Not so great for you. You're not going to make it. And those sorts of notions, even though it looks like a doctor's office would look in the 1960s,
yeah,
and there's lots so of technology, it is more frightening, yeah, a little, just slightly, maybe, than how it's going on now.
It might be too soon.
It might be too soon. I'm halfway through season two. There's some really crazy heavy meditation happening by some of the Japanese characters on the show. I don't know what's happening with that. I'm still really confused, but I'm willing to hang on for the ride.
You can find Popping Collars on the web at poppingcollarspodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/poppingcollars. You can find us on Twitter at Popping Collars and on Instagram at Popping Collars Podcast. Any social media platform, just, you know, search our name. You can find us. Please find us wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Subscribe, rate, and review the show. I don't know that that does any good, but like way more popular podcasts than us say it, and so I assume that it's something that we should say, but honestly, like, do what you want. But we are featured on EpiscopalCafe.com each and every time. We love EpiscopalCafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news, needs, and beyond. And with that, that is Popping College for this time. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Liz. And especially thank you, Anne, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
We will see you next time.
Keep those collars popped.